Today on the 21st, Illinois is set to further relax COVID-19 restrictions on Friday. We'll talk to county public health officials about what people can do and what they should do. Plus, the University of Illinois system will welcome tens of thousands of students back to three campuses this fall. We'll try to get a better understanding of what that might look like and what concerns students and faculty still have.
If I do come back to campus and it hits, I would be unable to return back to my family. That would be really taxing to me emotionally.
Then, with summer concert season canceled or postponed, we'll talk to a Central Illinois music promoter and a record store owner about what new music they're excited about. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on the 21st, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, and WNIJ in DeKalb. But first, the news. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Wednesday morning, the Illinois Department of Public Health announced another 601 newly confirmed cases of COVID-19, plus an additional 38 deaths. That brings the statewide totals to 137,825 confirmed cases and 6,707 lives lost. But unlike in many other states, the numbers in Illinois continue trending downwards. So at the end of the week, we expect all parts of the state to move to phase four of eased restrictions. Joining us to talk about how COVID-19 is affecting their communities are two downstate public health officials. Monica Hendrickson is the public health administrator of the Peoria City and County Health Department. Monica, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
And Gail O'Neill is the public health director for the Sangamon County Department of Public Health. Gail, thank you for being here.
Thank you. This will be fun.
And we want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. Is there something you're looking forward to in phase four, a trip to the movie theater maybe, or maybe you're planning to hang back and see how it goes as other people venture out? Give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st show. That's at 21st show. So Monica, I'll begin with you. I wonder, what are you seeing with coronavirus and COVID-19 in Peoria?
So I think in Peoria, similar to other parts of Central Illinois, we've seen, you know, maybe sporadic spikes that come in based on outbreaks associated with either long-term care facilities or employment areas. But overall, we've seen kind of a consistent drop as well. Specifically in our hospital data, when we're looking at admissions and ICU capacity as it related to COVID. So overall trending in the right direction and really kind of now monitoring what it means when we change phases.
And Gail, same question to you. I wonder what is COVID-19 and coronavirus look like in Springfield and Sangamon County?
Well, we've done the same thing. Our numbers have gone down. We did also have a long-term care facility outbreak earlier, a month or two ago, and that did quickly spike our numbers. They have come down. Now we're seeing a little bit of an increase each day, just in the last couple. So we are not really sure with the reopenings and the gatherings that have happened if that's a result of that. But we're cautiously optimistic at this point.
Okay. And do you feel like you have everything you need in terms of testing capacity and you know, capturing what's out there at this point? Because I know that was a challenge for a lot of health departments early on.
Right. Right now we have the capability to do quite a bit of testing in our community. Both hospitals have outpatient operations where people can be tested. We have a Walgreens site, which is a 7-day-a-week testing site, which is doing well. We have had a testing site in our parking lot that SIU has, their Federally Qualified Health Center has sponsored. Its last day is Friday. We were a little concerned, but IDPH is going to put one here for at least a week or two to see how many people can come in. So, yeah, having testing available is a concern right now.
And Monica, same question to you in Peoria. Is the testing capacity where you think it should be?
I think we'd always want to see and make sure that there's increased testing capacity overall. But here in Peoria, we have a federal site or community-based site here outside of our civic center that's been operating. They average about anywhere from 150 to 200 daily, as well as our federally qualified health center, Heartland Health Services, has been providing testing at a variety of locations, including the health department on weekends, but also in very much high vulnerable population areas. And so our hospital systems have testing. IDPH, or the Illinois Department of Public Health, has also provided, as we move into the next phase, options for, I think, remote or pop-up testing sites as they're needed. But I think overall, we'd like to make sure that anyone that needs to get tested has the ability to get tested at, you know, as soon as possible. And I think that's going to be really important when we move into our next phase.
And that was actually a question I had before we get to talking about phase four. What are you encouraging people? When are you, because early on, I think it was, even if you think you're sick, if you're not in a particularly vulnerable demographic group, just assume you're sick, isolate, don't come in for testing. Is that still the case? Or do you want, should everybody get a test even if they think they've just been exposed at this point? Or is it somewhere in between?
It's a little bit of somewhere in between. I think there's individuals that work in essential services or interact with individuals on a routine basis that, you know, testing is part of now maybe daily operations for them in terms of routine. But we really recommend that individuals that have been with groups of people, you know, using testing as a way to understand, you know, what your exposure is. Because again, this virus transmits person to person. And so if you've been in contact with large groups of people or have been exposed to different individuals, whether it's been through different activities, then that's what we'd be looking at.
And Gail, same question to you. Similar guidelines in Sangamon County that you're following?
Similar guidelines. Yes. Yeah. Sounds like Peoria's got a little bit more testing ability than we do at this point, which is good. And testing is important for the next phase that everybody's focusing on, is the contact tracing phase. So as we find people who have tested positive and identify their contacts, we need to have testing available for them as well so that we know and can kind of squash the spread as soon as possible. So, yeah, that is important. And in the beginning, you can only test if you met certain criteria because, you know, testing was limited. It's a new virus. There's new tests. There's all kinds of things going on. But from here forward, we should have increased number of tests available. And testing is the key to all this because it spreads person to person, but we don't know who has it when, because we believe now that it's spread mostly 2 days before people might even have an indication that they're not feeling well. So, yeah, testing is the key, and we need to encourage people to do that.
And Gail, as you know, this pandemic has been really hard on state and local finances. I wonder, as a local health department, do you think you have the resources you need? And you mentioned contact tracing. I mean, that's something that, and surveillance testing, I think, is what you're sort of referring to as people get out more. Do you have what's needed for that, or is that still something that needs to be ramped up?
We have been very fortunate to be, you know, supported from our county government. If there's something that we need, we've not done without, and we're very fortunate to have that situation. The state health department has provided some emergency funding maybe a month ago to the health departments, which is helpful to try to cover some of our costs. We had, over the last few years, been able to hire some part-time nurses to help us with our flu clinics when that time of year happens, and they're always on standby if we have something happen. So we were able to ramp up our contact tracing and our infectious disease activities pretty quickly here. So we were doing really well with that. The state has offered the health departments sizable grants for contact tracing into this next phase. It's in the process, I think, for everybody. You know, we quickly had to submit some applications, and they're in the review process right now.
And Monica, similar question about resources. Do you think that in Peoria, are you getting what's needed there, or could more be done?
Echoing exactly what Gail said, I think we have seen funding streams come through. We use a different model here in Peoria. We don't actually use RNs or nursing staff to do disease investigation. We actually have a specific position that's related to investigating all types of diseases. And, you know, during COVID, it's been actually really advantageous for us to have that model. Likewise, we are hoping to get the funding approved and the contract signed so that we can hire. We've already started our interview process as well. But we know that moving forward, because contact tracing is going to be the cornerstone to balancing reopening, but also protecting the health of our community, making sure that we have those staffing levels up and running. And so, like our counterparts, I think we've been lucky here in Peoria, but, you know, some of our smaller entities, you know, it's not been the same story. And so it's not equal across the state, but in Peoria, we've been lucky so far.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Monica Hendrickson, who's the administrator at the Peoria City and County Health Department, as well as Director Gail O'Neill of the Sangamon County Department of Public Health. And we want to know if you're excited about Phase 4, eager to go bowling or sit down inside a restaurant, or maybe you have a question for one of our public health experts. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So Monica, as of Friday, as I said earlier, Illinois is set to move to Phase 4 of easing COVID-19 restrictions. More types of businesses will be able to be open. Can you give us a couple of the highlights of what is going to be different?
Definitely. I think the biggest difference that we're going to see is related to more of our entertainment capacity, more things inside. So health and fitness, taking things from external to inside their facilities. And I think the largest one that a lot of people's interest is indoor dining. And so the ability for restaurants and food establishments to operate in a healthy and safe way inside is going to be, I think, a lot of the biggest change we would see. In addition, we're seeing more non-essential services come on, as well as increase in terms of capacity. So right now, the gatherings have been focused around limiting to groups of 10. We're seeing that go up to 50 in different industries.
And Gail, I imagine there's some difference between maybe what people can do in Phase 4 and what they should do, at least for some people. Do you have any advice on that?
Yeah, Phase 4 is part of, I think, one of the things that we kind of battle is the complacency or the not excitement about wearing a mask. I mean, masks are a part of our lifestyle that needs to kind of get everybody to remember to be cautious and be careful and to wear the masks, whether we like it or not. They are hot. I mean, when you're outside, they can be annoying, and people are using whatever excuse to not wear them. And that's one of the things that we need to remind people, that Phase 4 still means mask and still means social distancing. We can be in larger groups, but we still need to be far apart. So I think the idea of having some entertainment and indoor dining is really what people have missed. Movies, those kind of things, but we don't want to just be a total free-for-all. We've seen some of that in our facilities that haven't really quite followed the rules all the way, and there's been some large gatherings. Now, we've not seen testing to say that that's, you know, caused some of the spread yet, but we expect that it's going to be important to still be vigilant and careful with the wearing the masks and washing the hands and, you know, being aware of your surroundings.
Okay. We've got just a few minutes left in our conversation. I kind of want to do like a bit of a lightning round here. A few weeks ago, The New York Times came out with a survey of apparently 511 epidemiologists asking when they would feel comfortable doing certain activities again. And I just want to bounce a couple of these off to you and see where you stand. And I mean you in your personal life, not necessarily what the guidelines say we can do. And maybe you can say, I'd do this now, I'd rather wait a few months or not until after a vaccine. So I guess, Monica, I'll begin with you. Bring in mail or package deliveries without precautions?
I do that currently.
You do that currently. Gail, do you do that too, or are you wiping things down still?
No, I bring it in without precaution.
So we don't have to worry about that. What about getting a haircut at a salon or a barbershop?
I finally got one and needed it badly. I got one last Saturday, so I felt comfortable with all the precautions my hairdresser used.
You did. And what should people be looking for in that circumstance if they're evaluating whether to go in and they're standing outside nervously, like peering in the window?
Yeah. Mine is a private shop that she operates, and she had the thermometer and wouldn't let me even in the building till she'd taken my temperature. She had, you know, a mask for me, which I had one anyway, but we put on a different mask so that if it got wet or anything, that would be okay. And she was masked. Everything was wiped down as I came in, and she did it as I was leaving. I was surprised that you can actually get your hair washed and not have the strings from the around your ears get wet or get in the way for a cut. So I think she was doing everything pretty cautiously. We've had complaints from time to time from people in the community that say different hairdressers or styling salons aren't using masks, and we send them out. And the public is good at reporting. If they don't see something that looks safe to them, they shouldn't use it.
And Monica, would you get a haircut now?
I just got one yesterday.
Okay, so that's all right. Well, Monica, will you eat at a dine-in restaurant?
Currently, no.
No. And Gail,
and I think a
you?
Lot of that yeah. is partly understanding how the virus operates. Now, don't get me wrong. I think our food industry has done a fantastic job, like our salons as well. You know, they're licensed. They go through food safety. They go through a lot of requirements. A lot of my issue about not dining in or even dining outside is based on the fact that public health has always been kind of the, co-pilot in the backseat. No one really knows about us. We just keep operating. And having been full front and center a lot, being recognized, I kind of like to go to being anonymous eventually. So I think part of it is also just personally don't wanting to enjoy a quiet meal is kind of going to be difficult for a while.
Right. That makes sense. And we've only got about less than a minute left. So just get through a few more of these. Gail, will you be eating at a restaurant?
Not right away, just for the same reasons that Monica just mentioned.
What about attending a church or another religious or some sort of religious service?
I've started to enjoy the ones online, actually.
Yeah.
I think the church I currently belong to is big and there's room for spacing, but I'm gonna give it a few more weeks.
And Monica, would you go to a church or a religious service?
Again, I actually appreciate what the online services are, so likewise with Gail.
What about sending kids to school or daycare, Monica?
This one actually really is a hard one. I have young children. Based on their guidances, I do feel comfortable sending them in. But at the same time, I think you said it can versus should. And because I'm able to stay at home at times, and my husband as well is able to stay at home, you know, it's not necessarily a necessity for us. And so I'm okay not doing it right away.
Okay. And I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you both so much for playing the lightning round and for telling us about COVID-19 in your area. Monica Hendrickson is Public Health Administrator for Peoria City County Health Department. Gail O'Neill is Health Director for Sangamon County. Thanks again to both of you. More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The University of Illinois system, including its Urbana, Springfield, and Chicago campuses, will welcome back tens of thousands of students this fall for a mix of in-person and online instruction. The news came in an announcement last week, just days after the U of I at Urbana announced they would begin using a saliva COVID-19 test on more than 50,000 students returning to campus. Although colleges and universities across the state have issued some guidance about how the school year will look, many students, professors, and parents still have questions about how things are going to play out this fall. We reached out to three students here in Illinois who are trying to figure out what this school year will look like for them.
This is Jesse. I'm a graduate student at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
I am Rohan Agarwal from India, and I study at University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
My name is Diego Vigueras, and I'm an international student from Mexico living in Chicago.
Given the option, I will opt to take my classes online. I think if students can continue learning remotely, they should.
I'm honestly scared of how damaging this pandemic is. I have no family in the US, and there is a high chance that there will be a second wave in the fall. So if I do come back to campus and it hits, I would be unable to return back to my family. That would be really taxing to me emotionally. Even though we have a testing policy in place, we cannot guarantee 100% that everyone would adhere to the norms. For example, we cannot say for sure that everyone will wear masks and everyone will sanitize their hands regularly.
I know and understand that the situation changes every day and that our professors and school are doing what they can to give us what we are paying for. As a cinematography student, I need to use the Pol video and lighting equipment, and I wouldn't mind the mandatory use of masks and gloves to use the equipment. But if we have to take classes online again in the fall, I think I will take a free quarter, as I don't see the point of paying tuition if we're not able to access the equipment.
I think that personally for me, I would rather prevent myself from putting myself out there at risk and continue my next semester online.
I would rather modify my educational experience than risk getting myself or anyone else sick. It isn't worth it.
All right, so some student perspectives there. For more on this, I'm joined now by WBEZ education reporter Kate McGee. Kate, welcome back to the 21st.
Happy to be here.
I'd also like to introduce Christy Barnwell. She's Associate Professor of History at the University of Illinois Springfield. She's also President of the Professors Labor Union there, UIS United Faculty. She's also a family friend. Christy, thank you for being here.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So, and we want to ask our listeners, if you are maybe the parent of a college student or a student yourself, what are your concerns about the upcoming school year? You can join the conversation by giving us a call, 800-222-9455. Christy, I want to begin with you. Before we look ahead to the coming school year, I wonder if you could share what this past spring was like for you and other members of the faculty at UIS.
It was a really fast turnaround for us to move remotely. And I know from my experience and from talking to colleagues, it created a lot of difficulty at home. People who had to teach their classes and who have children at home or were sharing internet with their partners. And for our students, it really created a lot of upheaval for them to have to move out of the dorms mid-semester to figure out our international students how to get home. And we had a lot of students who just didn't have access to the kind of technology they needed. I think we all did a really good job of making do the best we could. And I think the students who made it through and the faculty who all made it through sort of felt like they came through it together and felt good about that. But it was definitely a difficult transition for everyone.
And Christy, what has the University of Illinois Springfield said about specific plans to reopen and reengage with students on campus this fall?
There still are, so each campus is making its own plan under this larger umbrella of the system, and UIS has not released a full plan. They're sort of putting out a little bit of information. We've made some initial adjustments, like all classes will be remote after Thanksgiving, so that if there's a spike in the fall, no matter what, students will be home. They won't be coming back and forth at this particularly dangerous incubation time. And that's been a great move, but we're still waiting on a lot of details from the administration about, you know, what it's gonna look like with testing, what kind of options are available for remote teaching, remote learning, those kinds of things.
Kate, I wanna bring you into the conversation. What sort of safety measures are other public universities in Illinois saying that they're going to be taking this fall?
So a lot of schools are basically trying to show students and faculty that they're trying to be as flexible as possible. And they're saying that they're planning for some sort of mixture of in-person and online classes. A lot of the policies that we're seeing as restaurants and stores reopen will apply to public spaces on campuses too. You know, in-person classes would need to have students spaced out 6 feet. Everyone's going to be provided a mask that they need to wear in class. At least the U of I says they'll be providing students with masks. Schools will have to figure out things like safety patterns in buildings so people can walk around without congregating in hallways. There's going to be hand sanitizer stations. And, you know, the U of I has said at least that they're going to require testing. Other schools haven't really been as specific as what their testing requirements are going to be and how that's going to happen. You know, the state came out with guidance for higher education institutions and community colleges, but many people see these as kind of a first step. You know, there hasn't been a lot of specific details on how things would happen, if all students would even be allowed to return to campus, especially at a school like U of I Urbana-Champaign, where you have 50,000 students coming back. How would that all of these things work with so many students on campus? And so I think schools want to signal to students, you know, hey, we're really thinking about this. We want to try and get back to quote unquote normal as quickly as we can, but we're also thinking about the health and safety implications that are coming along with it. And that's, you know, some of the details are still being waiting. We're waiting to kind of see.
Yeah, I think back to my own college experience, and I can't imagine trying to keep 6 feet apart from people all the time, just because of the sheer number of people that congregate on campuses. Kate, we talked about this on the show earlier this week on Monday, but I wonder if you can remind us and tell us a little bit more about the saliva testing that the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign is planning to use.
Right. So basically, you know, scientists, they've developed this test basically they need something that's scalable for a community the size of U of I with a huge population of students that can also be tested quickly and continuously throughout a semester. And saliva makes that much easier than the tests that many people have been using, you know, that goes way up your nose. That just requires more equipment and time. And so the saliva test would be much easier to do for a large campus like U of I. And U of I is planning to set up about 20 testing sites around campus where students could get tested as easily as like in between their classes or going from a dining hall to pick up a meal and going back to their dorm, and a place where students could get randomly tested too. They've attached these results to the on-campus university app that they have for phones that they launched last year, so students can get results on their phones. And they've even set up something on their app where students, if they wanted to opt in, could get alerted based on location if they've been exposed to students who have tested positive based on where they've been on campus. And so they're hoping that the saliva test, which at least one study says could be more sensitive to testing COVID, could be used to kind of have the kind of increased and continuous kind of testing that a school of this scale and size would need to be open for the fall.
Interesting. Yeah. Trying to imagine what it would be like getting that text message that says you might have been exposed.
I know.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The 21st. I've been speaking with WBEZ education reporter Kate McGee and University of Illinois Springfield professor Christy Barnwell about what we might expect as colleges open their campuses back up this fall. Also want to remind our listeners, you can join our new texting initiative. It's called Text the 21st. You can join by texting the word talk to 217-803-0730. This week we asked the group, would you feel comfortable attending or your child attending in-person classes this upcoming fall? We're going to hear some of those answers a little later in the conversation. Also want to remind, if you're listening now, you can give us a call with your questions, 800-222-9455. Phone lines are open at 800-222-9455. Christy, although as we're hearing, there is some guidance in terms of how campus will look, do you still feel ambiguity from some of your students about coming back to campus this fall? I mean, I imagine you're still trying to figure out what your own day-to-day is going to look like, making lesson plans, that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I haven't heard as much from students. We're on summer break, and so they're taking a break from me as much as I'm taking a break from them, I suppose.
Fair enough.
But I have been hearing a lot from faculty who are really worried about the practicalities of what it means. We want students to be on campus. Sometimes our students are safer on campus than they are at home, for example, and they have more access to resources, internet, those kinds of things to get their schoolwork done. But faculty, you know, who are in the classroom, we are a small institution and we're meant to have small classes with close face-to-face interaction between faculty and students, which is one of our great selling points, right? It's one of the best things that we do. But the reality is that our classrooms are tiny and we can't socially distance 25 students in a classroom. We just don't have the space to do that. So, you know, the logistics of how we can get 30 students into a classroom and teach that class just don't make sense. And as Kate was talking about sort of these paths, these safety patterns within buildings. Some of the hallways aren't even 6 feet wide, so we can't have traffic going two different directions. It's really just sort of the day-to-day operations. Those kinds of details make faculty nervous about what it means to be in the classroom and what that could look like. You know, and what happens if a student has to self-isolate and they're out of class for 2 weeks? How do we sort of meet the needs of students in the class? And how do we meet the students' needs who are sort of stuck in the dorm room waiting to find out if they're going to be okay? It becomes really a lot of planning on our part that is sort of, many of us are just not sure what this could possibly look like in a face-to-face setting.
Okay, so I think the bottom line here is that we're seeing, Kate, public confidence from universities, but like we just heard from Christy, we're hearing this sort of private skepticism among some of the faculty. And I wonder, I think, you know, probably from the university standpoint, one imagines this comes down to financial pressures that universities are under to reopen. And I wonder, Kate, if you can talk a little bit about what kind of effect COVID-19 has had on university finances.
Yes, I mean, you know, both public and private universities took a big hit when they had to reimburse tens of millions of dollars to students for housing and dining hall refunds last semester when students were sent home, plus other revenue from events or on-campus activities that no longer happened. You know, U of I last month said they expected a $160 million hit in revenue just from the pandemic in the past, you know, few months. And even private universities are struggling too. We're seeing private universities in Chicago, Northwestern as furloughed and is cutting staff. And people are, universities are trying to find ways to shrink those expenditures. I think, you know, it would be very tough to repeat that kind of situation for another semester in many of these schools. And in, you know, these smaller college towns too, it's tough for local economies there when you don't have students there, you know, living their lives like you normally do. A recent report from the Brookings Institute that came out recently found that regional public universities, the smaller universities like Chicago State or Northern Illinois or Southern Illinois, those are likely to actually fare the worst out of this rather than U of I, the flagship. You know, those schools don't have as large endowments to fall back on. They're serving larger populations of low-income students who are going to likely need more financial aid to return in the fall semester. Tuition increases aren't really possible in those situations. So there's a lot of concern about what the outlook is, not even this year, but in future years for those smaller public universities. You know, the state budget kept funding for higher ed consistent the same as last year. I think a lot of public universities breathed a kind of a sigh of relief seeing that money continue rather than seeing cuts immediately. But there's still a lot of uncertainty. And so they're really dependent on students showing up in the fall for classes, whether that's online or in person, and they need to kind of show that they're doing as much as they can so that the students decide to come back and enroll.
And of course, that state budget sort of dependent on federal, not sort of, but definitely dependent on federal funding coming through, which has not been forthcoming yet. Kate, just like maybe in a minute, because we're a little short on time here, but we heard from Rowan at the beginning of this segment. He's concerned about everyone adhering to social distancing guidelines. We also heard from one of our listeners. I mentioned the text, the 21st Initiative. They said our current rates are still not declining enough to warrant that, as in on-person, on-campus instruction. Combine that with some people's sense of invincibility, and it may be a sad situation. So, Kate, again, in less than a minute, many parts of the campus experience, like social, you know, socialization, parties, mealtime and dining halls, extracurriculars, they revolve around this close contact, often indoors. Do we have a sense of how life outside the classroom will be handled by universities?
You know, initial guidance says that universities are planning to limit occupancy to like dining halls and residence halls, to even do to-go meals or reduce the number of students who are in a dorm, rather one student per room rather than two. So there's some initial guidance there, but there's still, as we've been saying before, more details need to be revealed about how this would work on a day-to-day logistical setting. I think the bigger questions are those parties or what's happening off campus. You know, how can a school really address if there's a party of 100 people right at an off-campus house? You know, right, what happens then?
And Christy, last question to you. And again, we've only got about 30 seconds, but we had a response from a listener through our text, the 21st Initiative. They said, I remain convinced that effective treatment methods should be at least as important as developing a vaccine, but they also believe in-person attendance at college is vital. And I wonder if part of you, despite your concerns, is eager to have students back on campus and get back into the classroom if it can be done safely.
All of us really love teaching our students and really love interacting with our students. But I think one of the things we discovered in the spring is just how resilient our students are and just how much we could make deep connections with our students even through online remote learning. We had really good, in my classes, we had great conversations, sometimes more in depth than we were able to have in the classroom because sort of the pause made us think a little bit more about how we connected to one another. So I'm not so sure that a semester of remote learning would actually hinder people, their educational quality that much. I remain optimistic.
Christy Barnwell is an associate professor of history at the University of Illinois Springfield. We also spoke with Kate McGee, education reporter at WBEZ Public Radio in Chicago. Thank you both for speaking with me this morning.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Brian.
You are listening to the 21st coming up, Summer Songs. Stay with us. More to come after a short break. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. One of the many events that have been postponed on account of to the disappointment of music fans, I should say, are summer concerts. From Pitchfork in Chicago to Summer Camp in Chillicothe, music festivals have announced cancellations or postponements during the COVID-19 pandemic, and even lingering in a record store to browse new music carries a certain level of risk right now. So we wanted to offer some summer music recommendation from artists both here in Central Illinois and around the world. Joining us to let us know what they're listening to is Christine Palin. She's performer and DIY show promoter in Urbana and is also a board member of Girls Rock CU, a nonprofit that empowers girls through music education. Christine, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'd also like to welcome Brian Galecki, owner of Dumb Records in Springfield. In addition to selling records, they host a lot of local artists for shows, or at least they did in the before times. Brian, welcome to the 21st.
Hello, welcome. Thanks for having me.
And you can join the conversation by tweeting us your song recommendations at 21STShow, that's at 21st Show, or email us at talk@21stshow. We're going to put together a Spotify playlist later with some of these recommendations from our guests and some from you as well. So, Christine, I want to begin with you. Unfortunately, no concerts, no shows this summer, at least not large ones in the next few weeks or months. But last year you saw an artist, Shamir, at a festival you played last summer. Can you tell us a bit about this artist?
Yeah, so Shamir is a vocalist, singer, songwriter, and guitarist based out of Los Angeles, I believe. And he's been making music since I think his first record came out in 2014. And he just, his work ethic, he just moves so effortlessly between genres. And he's put out like 6 albums in 6 years, and like three EPs. And is just an incredible, hardworking musician. Already put out an album this year and is putting out another one later this year. The one earlier this year is an indie rock album, and it sounds like this one is going to be more pop. So the song I chose from him is his latest single, On My Own, which I adore.
All right, let's take a listen. All right, that's On My Own by Shamir. Brian, owner of Dumb Records in Springfield, I understand in addition to selling records, you all do a lot of shows for Illinois bands. Yep. How has that been this year?
Of course, with the pandemic coming into fruition back in mid-March, we had to pull the plug on everything, and it soon became really clear that we had to completely wipe out our calendar, which we had shows planned throughout the summer even. But all that is no more, of course. So we've been keeping afloat by focusing on the record store aspect. We've been fortunate enough to be able to constantly be shipping orders out to people and making deliveries kind of throughout this whole thing. So we're eager to get back to doing live shows, of course.
Yeah. And one of your summer music recommendations is actually a band from Springfield called Bottom Bracket. Mm-hmm. Let's take a listen to their song, Sunrise. That is Sunrise by Bottom Bracket. And of course, Sunrise is spelled S-O-N-R-I-S-E, a nod, I assume, to the iconic sign on the former right. donut shop turns taco stand, Brian. Is that?
That is correct. Yeah. Currently, it's a Taqueria Molorion. It's one of our favorite local restaurants to go to. But they since took down the sign, and I believe it's being restored and is going to be part of the sign museum over at A Sign Company.
I have seen it there, the NPR Illinois, the member station of the 21st, actually had a station event there late last year, and the sign does look very nice. So, Brian, I understand Bottom Bracket is with a label out of Champaign, is that?
Rat King Records, friends of mine, put out the record for them, being released on vinyl, CD, and cassette. So that was one. I picked that because that was one of the first shows that we had to cancel, unfortunately, was the big release show for that record there. So quite an interesting time for a band to be putting out. Really, it's their debut full-length record, and there's been a lot of buildup leading up to this. They've been working really hard to put this record out, and now we're in a pandemic, and they can't play shows or tour or anything like that around it. So we have plenty of copies in the store, though.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're talking summer music recommendations with Brian Galecki, owner of Dumb Records in Springfield, and also Christine Palin, who is a performer and a board member of Girls Rock CU. We've also had some listeners tweet recommendations to us at 21ST Show. That's at 21st Show. John on Twitter says, "My favorite song written in the COVID era has been the very mellow Tell Your Friends by the Belleville-born Chicago-based band Wilco. Listening to lots of other slow and quiet songs this summer as well." Christine, we're going to go from Central Illinois to France now, I think, with your next recommendation from an artist called Christine and the Queens. You mentioned that their album came out earlier this year, pre-pandemic, but you got your vinyl copy and it's been on repeat.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So this is a stage name of a French pop musician, Eloise Letissier. And she, in particular, in relation to COVID, you know, she's planning to do a bunch of promotion for this album. It came out right before everything hit, and then she kind of pivoted to doing a lot of really cool stuff on Instagram, all these Instagram lives and Q&As and performances in her apartment. And so this EP and this song in particular has really been with me through a lot of this time. So it means a lot to me.
I took one adult education course in French, and so I think I'm going to have you pronounce the name of the song again, because it sounds like you speak French pretty well.
So the song's called Je disparais dans tes bras.
All right, let's take a listen.
Conséquence, je saigne déjà. 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 Pourrais-tu m'aimer? Ça, j'en doute. Quand tu prends que ce que tu veux de moi, que tu n'aimes que ce que tu veux de moi, quand tu ne veux qu'une partie de moi.
Brian, this next artist is also from the Springfield area, and she's one of the group of young women very involved with organizing some of the protests and rallies earlier this month. What can you tell us about her and her music?
This would be Nikela Henderson, and she's just blown me away. Her and a group of other young adults really took charge in organizing a lot of the protests and rallies that were being held at the start of this month. And I opened up our space. It's kind of unfortunate right now we can't hold events or anything, but I wanted to be available in any way I could. So we were able to offer our space as a meeting space for their kind of newly formed group called the Black People Party of America. And Nikela goes by the performance name of King. She performed here before, and as soon as we're able to do shows again, I would love for her. She's pretty eager to start setting up performances herself and everything. So definitely one of the first shows whenever that can be, whenever we come back, I would love to have her organize something. But she kind of blew me away because like they're having such a busy time right now. She met with the governor and Senator Durbin, and all this stuff is happening. And somehow amidst all that, she's releasing new music too.
All right, well, let's take a listen to a clip from the artist King.
Nah, I gotta understand, can't never let that pain get you king.
Christine, your next summer song recommendation you described as one of the catchiest songs of 2013 by a band called Sad 13.
I think I meant 2020 because it didn't come
Okay. typo in my script here, but that's fine. So tell me about Sad 13 in 2020.
Yeah, so Sad 13 is the solo project of Sadie Dupree, who is the guitarist, vocalist, and primary songwriter in the band Speedy Ortiz. They're an indie rock, alt rock band that's been around since 2013. I think that's when their first full-length record came out. And yeah, this is the first single off of her upcoming solo album. And it's just, Sadie's one of my favorite contemporary songwriters and lyricists. And this song has like everything for it for me. Sarah from Illuminati Hotties produced it. Zoe Brecker, who's an amazing drummer, is drumming on it. Audrey Z. Whitesides, who's an amazing bassist, is playing bass on it. And it's just like a dream team and a wonderful, extremely catchy song. And came out mid-May and it got me really excited for summer. So that's why I picked it.
I feel like I aged 10 years between the moment when I said Sad 13 and you pointed out that it's pronounced Sadie. So let's hear a little bit of Sadie's song, WTD. And Christine, what draws you into a song like that?
For me, one of my favorite aspects of that song in particular is that it's a rock song with just incredible pop sensibilities and just catchy hooks. I just love a good chorus, and that has a great chorus. And so yeah, what I really love about Sadie in particular is her way of incorporating like pop sensibilities into rock music.
And just more broadly, what makes a good summer song for you? Is it those same characteristics?
For me, it's something I can imagine listening to in the car with the windows down. And nice. That one I can imagine for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's probably a pretty safe thing to do driving around.
Yeah,
by
it's about all we can do.
Windows down. Yeah. Brian, what about you? What makes a good summer song for you?
Oh, I guess I'd have to go with the same, really. Yeah. I love listening stuff with the windows down or riding your bike, you know, out in the open fields or something with headphones on. It's always a good summer vibe.
And no people around, I guess. We also had another tweet from somebody going by Malin181 who says, Levels is one of my favorite bands right now. Last September, they released this song called A Place. It puts me right in a summer mood. I enjoy being able to actually listen to it during the summer this year. Brian, last song from you is actually from the 70s. It's one of your recommendations called Summer.
Yeah, I had to grab one that was just, you know, very related to summer. So
yeah, so
and,
this
and
is,
I grabbed an older one too.
So this is by a band called Octopus. How'd you discover this?
Just a more recent discovery there. I'm always on the lookout for 60s or 70s bands that I never would have found otherwise, and it was just like through some blog on the internet or something like that that I kind of stumbled across. I thought the artwork looked really cool, and it was from 1969, and I ended up really loving this album. I am on the hunt for a copy on vinyl now. It's called nice. Restless Nights is the name of the album.
Okay, well, let's take a listen to Summer. All right, that is, again, Summer by a band called Octopus, and that was a recommendation of Brian Galecki, owner of Dumb Records in Springfield. Brian, thanks for sharing some of your recommendations with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we've also been speaking with Christine Palin, who's a show promoter and a performer and a board member of Girls Rock CU. Christine, thank you for sharing some of your recommendations with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we want to mention that tomorrow we are going to be working, we're working on a segment, want to know what comes to mind when you see Aunt Jemima or hear that Illinois-based Quaker Oats says it is discontinuing that brand. Tomorrow we're going to be looking at racial stereotypes in branding. We want to hear from you. Send us an email or send a voice memo to talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Our program is produced by Libby Foster, Anna Casey, and Ryan Wild. Eunice Alpison's our engagement producer, and our intern is Zaini Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey.